This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
You don't talk about Bruno. You don't talk about that.
And Karina Anglada.
Wow. Shout out to that producer.
We're continuing our celebration of AAPI Month, and this week we have Akshay Ram, well known around the Twitter sphere for his design-centric tips for the sports industry. He's the project manager for Creative Cloud Assets and Collaboration. How'd he get there, and how does he impact a product most of us use on a daily basis? Well, as we found out, he's really good at answering questions before they're even asked.
Karina, time dot is.
Oh, yes. Wait, I always forget.
And time. Justin is going to pick the time.
48.
I hate it. I can't. But anyways.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
We are so excited. Akshay, welcome to the Creative Sports Podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited.
Awesome. Well, we have a lot to chat about, and we've got Darius, we've got Justin on the call, so it's going to be an awesome conversation. But I am really excited about this conversation because we're Adobe colleagues and met through the sports creative industry and social media before we actually like connected as Adobe colleagues. But before we get into all of where you are now, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got started in your career.
I'm so glad we're having this conversation together because it feels like we're just taking our coffee chats from work and we get to share it to a larger mm-hmm. audience. But yeah, absolutely. My journey is an interesting one. I think it's more relevant to the people that are growing up today. But, you know, early on, when I was younger, I wanted to become a YouTuber. And so I had all these aspirations of trying to become the next NBA 2K YouTuber. So when that was in trend in like the early 2010s, I told my parents, I want to go buy an Xbox. I want to start recording 2K commentary and posting it on YouTube. And I finally convinced them and they got me all the tech to start recording my Xbox. And then right before I started recording my first video, I was like, well, I need to build like a YouTube channel and my YouTube brand. So I started looking up all these Photoshop tutorials and I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, this is how I can make a logo. You know, fast forward that story, I never ended up actually posting a YouTube video. I fell in love with the process of building a YouTube channel, making my own logo and building the brand behind it. So I started sharing it on Instagram at that time. Because Instagram started to become more popular. And I was always following sites like DeviantArt, and some of my favorite designers started slowly migrating their content from these websites to Instagram. So I was like, well, I want to try the same thing. Like, I just learned the Adobe suite. Like, I want to see if I can do the same thing. So I just started posting content for fun. Friends at school started seeing it, and they wanted the wallpapers they were already saving from different websites. I'm like, I want to do the same. So, you know, my passion for sports then combined with my interest in trying to get into designing. And I just started designing for fun, making wallpapers for my friends. And the rest is kind of history. I think it slowly led to me just posting every day. I'd come back home from school and I'd put together something for fun. And then I started using it more at school for different projects. And I was like, this is a really cool thing. And then right around high school, I was like, well, how can I take advantage of this opportunity to use it more in sports? I'm originally from Massachusetts, so I was trying to figure out, like, where can I leverage this? Like, can I go work for a team? And my school guidance counselor at that time said, hey, we have Holy Cross, which was a neighboring college. He's like, why don't you go ask them if you can volunteer for the summer? And just so happened that that same exact day on Twitter, the graphic designer for Holy Cross posted an internship position that same exact day. So it was very, it was crazy. I reached out and I'm like, hey, I'm a high school student, but would love to volunteer and help out. And that's how I got connected into working at Holy Cross. And Holy Cross had amazing people at that time that ended up reaching out and working at different colleges and the NHL. So it was just the start of getting to actually build a network and interact with different types of people. But in the back of my mind, I always knew that I wanted to go to Syracuse. It was just like this dream school for me. I don't know why. I think it was when I was going through that process of trying to figure out where I wanted to volunteer or go work for a summer, I saw that Syracuse was one of the closest programs in the New England area to have a graphic design major. And I'm like, you know what? It's decided I'm going to Syracuse. So I kind of spoke it into existence there and then ended up going to Syracuse, working in athletics and football there. And then I also got the chance to work at Bleacher Report on the side of school. So I was able to pair that up. And then finally, here I am working at Adobe. So that's kind of the timeline of how everything came together.
That's the Cliff Notes version. That is amazing. There's a lot we can dig into there. But one of the things that I love and just the general story that you shared is you kind of went where your curiosities kind of just naturally took you. Is that something that you've always purposefully done? Or do you just kind of like go where the wind takes you or where your curiosities lead you?
Yeah, I think you said it exactly. You know, especially when we work in sports or just in the creative atmosphere, like things are changing every day. And it's like, how can I make an impact on what the future looks like? And so I think that's where I always wanted to do something different that could inspire a lot of other people that want to get in industries like this. And so I think that's what kind of shifted me into pursuing all these different avenues and thinking about where you can go from, you know, just posting online on social media to working on a team in college and then seeing how that can transpire to a larger sports entity and also working on the professional side there. I think all of that kind of gravitated to the point where I was thinking more about how I can have an influence on that, but on the other side of the table. So that's where I was like, okay, well, why don't I pursue, you know, going to tech and seeing how I can influence or play a smaller role in the product development process.
So although you didn't get into your YouTube channel early on, you're very vocal, especially on Twitter, showcasing what's possible, especially in Photoshop using the CC libraries and those kinds of things. How long have you been doing that? And what's the idea behind sharing what you know with other people in the industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of the inspiration behind that is my mom is a music teacher. She runs a business. She runs a music school. And my dad used to teach when he was younger. So I kind of inherited the idea of just teaching others from them. And I was really inspired by them to just figure out how I can use my own avenues to educate and teach others. And so, you know, CC Libraries was kind of the start just because I found that as a solution for myself when we were in the pandemic and I wanted to find something that would work for me and my team at Syracuse so that we can collaborate outside of the office when we're all sent home. So I think that was a starting point, but I've only really done this for the last year and a half. And that's mainly because I felt more comfortable being outside of sports and reflecting on my experience and seeing what I wish I knew at that time that would have made me a better creative, a better designer, that I feel like a lot of creatives don't get the chance in their day to really think about because they're so focused on getting their work done. And so I think it's just this last year and a half where I was trying to think about the problem space of a lot of sports creatives that learned the basics on YouTube, went to YouTube University, but they didn't know where to take that next step. And a lot of these people that are intermediate, on advanced stage, they don't get the same type of content anymore. So I was trying to see if I can fill that gap in and also push the fact that they don't put enough time in their week to learn something new. So I think the combined interest of filling in those gaps inspired me to just post my own like learnings and what I wish I did better.
You mentioned your parents, and it seems like they've been very supportive of you from a very young age. And I feel like, you know, that's not always the case, especially for people of color, right? At least for my parents, like they still don't understand what I do sometimes. And I think I've been lucky to have really supportive parents that, you know, want me to go wherever my heart desires. But I'm curious, is it always been that way? Or were your parents skeptical when you said, hey, I want to work in sports, or I want to go this route? Because I feel like sometimes, you know, parents in general are like, oh, do the quote unquote, like steady career, doctor, lawyer, whatever it might be. Did you ever experience any of that growing up with your parents? Or were they generally like, you know, you mentioned they're teachers, so they seem to be open to a lot of ideas, but what was your experience there?
100%. It was exactly just that. It was trying to pursue the safer path. But I will also say that throughout the whole process, my parents have always been supportive of the decisions I made. They've always questioned it though too. So, I mean, I'd put that out there. I think coming from a family where when I was 8 months old, we moved all the way from the other side of the world. And I've been through a process of being a first generation Indian American here, as well as someone that has gone through the process of seeing my parents earn every single part of what they have here. There's obvious skepticism when you have a child that says, hey, I want to pursue something in sports, and you don't have someone to like kind of reflect that on and say, hey, that person did it, so right. It makes sense for me to do it as well. I think that was probably the hesitation that they probably had, because, you know, you don't grow up and have your kids say, one, they want to work in graphic design or want to do something in art, but also do something in sports, because you just don't see a lot of people like myself during that time that I could look up to and just say, hey, I want to be like them. I was, you know, very honored to know that when I was working at Bleacher Report, a lot of the people that I looked up to, even when I was like seeing their stuff on DeviantArt and sites like Posterizes, for example, I got the chance to work alongside of them, and they were a lot of people of color as well. And so, you know, just seeing that as a starting point, but hopefully myself being someone that future middle school, high school students can look up to, I think it's just shaping that path. But I think it really didn't resonate to my parents at that time. And that's why I wanted to, when I didn't get into graphic design or the sport analytics side that I wanted to do at Syracuse, and I ended up graduating with an engineering degree, I kind of gave them that promise that, you know, like, essentially I've done the safer path, but I also do want to pursue things outside of that and see how I can find the intersection of it all.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. With that being said, like, I know you talked about video games and wanting to do YouTube. Was there an affinity for sports, or did you just want to be in some type of creative lane when you were growing up? And when did that, if at all, shift to where you are now?
Yeah, it was always sports for me. I think it was just my way. Like, I was the short Indian kid growing up, and my only way to connect with sports was, you know, my height didn't allow me to go play on the basketball team all the time, but I could design something for my friends or show off that this is my passions as a fan of our pro sports teams. So it was sports from the start. And I think just being inspired at that time, when you grow up in Massachusetts, you're surrounded by so many successful pro teams and you see them have success and you want to reflect that in your own fandom. And so I think that's what, like, ever since the start, that's what it was. And that's why I use it for my examples when I talk about stuff on Twitter. It's, you know, I know a lot of people resonate with sports, and to connect it back to something you're passionate about, it makes your job so much easier and it feels like you're not really working at that time.
A lot of people who have come up in the YouTube university age, a lot of them feel like, oh, well, I can just learn everything from YouTube. School doesn't matter. All those things. Like, you could have taken that path and become a full-time YouTuber. What went into the decision of actually pursuing college and actually staying with it for as long as you did?
You know, I think the one thing that some people forget, and I think it's more popular today in regards to just learning off of YouTube, but there's experiences that you get in college that you can't really, you can't replicate outside of it. You know, mm-hmm. being able to work on a team, especially in sports creative, I think a lot of people are gearing towards freelance and all that stuff, which is awesome when you have the experience of knowing what it's like to go through a process of working on a team. So every time a college student reaches out to me and asks me what it's like, if they should just pursue freelance right out the gate, I'm like, you never get the opportunity to feel that, like, you know, the tension sometimes you have when you have to figure out what the process of delivering on a project looks like. And so I think those smaller experiences, knowing how to work with people outside of your knowledge space, is so important. And so I think that's always valuable to start your career earlier on, knowing how to work with other people. And then you can navigate it to be more independent and contributing to different entities. But I think that's the biggest thing that I was able to receive at Syracuse, or and even at Holy Cross when I was working there in high school, was just trying to navigate what it's like to work with coaches versus working with an athletic staff that's probably more business focused. So I always recommend to people that you pursue that. And then when, you know, when it aligns with your interest, you pursue the other parts, whether that's becoming a YouTuber or doing something independently.
Yeah, our listeners can't see, but all of us were nodding our heads furiously when you said that, you know, go the college route. And yeah, I think, you know, that's an interesting, it's an interesting shift in our industry right now. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And I think it's true. I agree with you personally on that. Like, besides the actual business intel that you get from learning how to work with coaches, learning how to work with athletic departments, learning how to work with student athletes and coaches and everything in between in the administration, you also miss out, like, if you don't go to college, you miss out on all these amazing, like, social, just like regular opportunities, and a huge network. You know, I didn't want to go to Illinois, to be frank. When I first, you know, went to school, it was in state, it was kind of safe. You know, a lot of my classmates from high school went to college there. So that's why I didn't want to go. I was like, I'm going to transfer. But now looking back, I'm like, I can't imagine my life without my college experience. So talk to us about Syracuse. Like, I feel like people that go to Cuse are like, I mean, there's something in the water there, because especially when it comes to athletics. What was your experience at Syracuse like, and what are some of the highlights of your time there?
Yeah, we're loud and proud when we go to Syracuse, but I think you see it a lot from Newhouse students when they go through a process of being able to bring back sports into the curriculum. I think it was different for me because, you know, I went in, like I mentioned before, with the intention of working in sports. I mean, even during that time, when I got to Syracuse, I wanted to be a GM of a sports team. That's why I went. I wanted to pursue the path of doing sport analytics. I was really good at math before, and I wanted to see if I could combine that with sports to just be one of those first GMs of Asian descent. And so that was a passion of mine, and I didn't, unfortunately, get into that program. And I didn't get into the graphic design school either at Syracuse. And so I ended up having to go with my third choice, which was just information science. So I was in the engineering school. And so, you know, that kind of shifted it for me, because I didn't pursue the same path that a lot of people pursue at Syracuse when they're trying to get into sports. I think what connected with me the most is during my junior year of high school, I took a visit up to Syracuse, and actually, it was one of these Slack channels, just like us. I was looking through the directory on my drive up there, and I found a grad student by the name of Mike Lang at that time. And while my dad was driving, I messaged him. I'm like, hey, I see that you work in the athletic side at Syracuse. I'm going to take my first visit, but here's my portfolio. Would love to intern for you while I'm in high school. 5 minutes later, I get a message back saying, sure, I'd love to have you as an intern. And I was like, cool, like, I'd love to meet up. And he ended up bringing me into the women's basketball game at that time. And it was the largest attended women's basketball game versus Notre Dame of that year. Like, just seeing the atmosphere, seeing the motion graphics that he put together on the screens, I'm like, this is where I gotta be. And just seeing the support that someone would reach out to you in a network like this 5 minutes after you send them a message and see that all connect, I'm like, I can trust this person for four more years to put me in a good position to leave and have a successful career. So I think that was the start of it. Mike Lang is now the creative director. He's the head of that whole program at Athletics or at Syracuse right now. But during my time at Syracuse, I got there with the intention of working basketball like many people do when you work at Syracuse. But I had previous experience working in recruiting at Holy Cross, football recruiting that is, and I wanted to pursue that at Syracuse as well. And we had a creative director that just came in at that time, and he ended up leaving a month into me being there as a freshman. So I basically got the role of being that interim creative director for some time, and it just carried on through the rest of my college experience, where I was essentially working a full-time job while going to school and being able to fit in that role of working in football. That's when I just got my passion for football at that time, just because I was surrounded by it. And when you're able to connect the creative side to what happens on the field and see how you can explore what it means to recruit the next best players, like, I think that's what gravitated to me the most. But I'll also add this. I think the thing that I took away from Syracuse was all the relationships that we made, because it was very intern focused. There was a lot of interns that were running that program. And so we really built a culture around accepting all different kinds of people and helping them pursue their interest even after college. So we were a very close-knit group, even to the fact that my closest friend at Syracuse now works at the 49ers here. And, you know, freshman year of college, we're like, how crazy.
Shout out Noah.
Yeah. We said, how crazy would it be if we ended up working in the same area after college? And so I think it's just deeper connections like that, which is what, you know, really made me super comfortable working at Syracuse. I think I was, like you said, like, I loved college, but I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. So I graduated in 3.5 years just because, you know, I didn't want to spend for an extra semester of tuition. And so I was like, let me see if I can just get out of here as soon as possible. And when you work in sports and get so much hands-on experience, you just feel ready for the real world. And so I felt like I was in a good position where I could kind of give up my last semester of college. And that was all thanks to the people that allowed me to be the person I am as a creative and contribute.
You know, when you think about Syracuse and you think about, one of the first things that come to mind is Newhouse, right? When you're around people of that magnitude, students and that program itself, talk about how it's kind of a iron sharpens iron environment to be around that many creative people and talented people at your same age level and above.
For me personally, I didn't get to see the side of what it felt like to go to class with them, just because I never took Newhouse classes myself. But you could see that there was a passion and enthusiasm for what it meant to work in sports. Even when, after I graduated, I got the chance to go back and speak at Newhouse this past year and talk to the master students, and just seeing the passion that they had. A lot of these people dreamed of working in sports ever since they were 10, 11 years old. Like, it was just ingrained in them that that was their future. So just seeing how they work together, going through their freshman to sophomore year, seeing what they have to participate in, whether that's, you know, 3 to 4 different news networks, just to really feel like they can put their foot through the door and get some of these opportunities. I think it's like, I give them major props for it. I think for me personally, being able to not have to go through that environment made it more exciting for me to leave the classroom and feel like I was doing something just for myself. So being able to go do my coding during the day and, you know, go and watch practice if I need to after class, or put together a couple graphics, like, for me, I was able to build that healthy balance where it felt like I wasn't competing with anyone necessarily. It was more so just building my own repertoire of things that I wanted to get done. So I think it was very cool to see people that, you know, pursued the Newhouse route. But I think a lot of our intern program was also people that were psychology majors, for example, like that just wanted to be part of sports and be connected in a different way. And so I think that's why our intern program was so diverse in that aspect, where it was just anyone, like anyone was welcome. And we really grew that culture of making sure that everyone felt welcome.
You said major props to everybody else, but major props to you for, you know, I think sometimes people will be like, oh, well, I didn't get into the program, I can't do it, right? Or I don't have this background, everybody else is better than me, I might as well not even try, right? And you said you got into your third choice of a major, right? But you didn't let that stop you. And I think that's so important. And one of the common themes that I'm hearing with a lot of guests, yourself included, is that, you know, there's a common theme of getting into the industry. It's assertiveness, it's taking initiative and reaching out to people. And it's that, like, so having that self-confidence in yourself. So it's amazing to see where you began, what your original intentions were, you know, going from YouTube and then as a high schooler working with, you know, Holy Cross, and then shifting to Syracuse, hitting some roadblocks. Like, it's amazing. And I think it's a message that everyone needs to hear. I'm curious, though, because, you know, you've still shifting in a sense, right? You working as a product manager with Adobe, working in tech, which, you know, maybe wasn't expected for you. But how did you get into your role at Adobe? What was the catalyst that put you in the position you're in today?
I think the one thing, I quickly touched on it before during my summary, but, you know, Justin asked about like the CC libraries part, but that was just, you know, purely me trying to figure out a solution at that time for our creative team on navigating what it's like to collaborate outside of our offices, outside of our servers. And so during that pandemic time, I was like, we have all these brand assets, we need to figure out a way to really bring this all together so that even if we're all sitting at home, we can collaborate, make sure we're all using the same assets. So I figured out CC libraries at that time. And, you know, as anyone in sports, Twitter, sports creative Twitter, like, you know, you just want to share the things that you learned with other people. So for me, I was just like, I just want to thank Adobe for doing that for me. And so I just put out a tweet saying, "Dear Adobe, thank you for making this feature." Not realizing what the impact of just sharing a tweet would be. And at that time, it brought in the director of product of CC Libraries to respond to that tweet, ask me like what I liked about it, and just gauging what it felt like to be a user of Adobe tools. And I was like, wow, like Adobe actually listens to people. And Karina, you know this as much as me. Like, I think that's one thing that really drives us to do what we do at our job now. It's just being able to know that we can connect back to the people we used to work with. And we used to really play a role in delivering some of this content. And started with one connection there, but I built a relationship with him for over a year, just going back and forth, sharing my ideas. Like, I didn't know it was such an open platform to me, for me to be like, hey, like, I'd love to see this in an Adobe product. And I would just get on a call and share it with them. And then I just casually one day while I was going through internship positions, I was like, hey, I see one at Adobe. Would you recommend me for this? And he's like, why don't you join our team at on the CC library side itself? And I was like, well, I don't see a position for it right now. And so I didn't know what that meant. I just wanted to be surrounded by the people that were building it. So I didn't know what a product manager was at that time. I just knew that I get to sit in a room with them and just share all my ideas. And just that got me so curious as to what that meant. And so my internship was just filled with me learning about what product management was, what the product development process was, and just everything that came around it. And I was like, well, these are all stuff I just do already on Twitter. Like, now I get to sit in a room and like, that's my job, where it's making decisions on what the future of a product is. And it just so happens that the major that I was in at Syracuse, I was in a product development class that same spring. And so I was learning a lot of the things that would potentially carry over to my internship. And I'm like, well, this is cool. Now I can actually take advantage of the education I had at Syracuse connected to my hobby and my interest that I was doing outside of class, and bring it all together. So I think that's what eventually brought me to Adobe. It was just seeing that you could go through that process of doing something for fun, but then connecting it back to what you went and studied for. And I wouldn't say I was the most dedicated student by all means, but I think just being able to piece that all together and just knowing that I built a relationship with someone that I could really trust, again, like carrying the same things that brought me to Syracuse, but, you know, a team of product managers that I could trust with me going through a career shift and pivoting so that I could try something new, just being able to pursue that other than just going back in sports just was, I was like, I'd rather take that chance to change careers like right after college. And so that's kind of what led me at Adobe.
So when you look at your experience so far, I mean, hopefully you got a long road ahead of you, but you have Syracuse, you have Bleacher Report, you have Adobe. Like when you look
casual,
right? When you think about that, like, what does that mean to have that on your, you know, on your resume, under your belt, like in your toolbox, to have those big brands and experience so far?
It's humbling, and I'm truly grateful for it, just because, you know, every single opportunity has been through some kind of networking platform or just knowing some type of people and really putting my interests out there. And so I think just knowing that that's been a result of all of that, truly, and I get to work with great people. I think every time I pursued a new opportunity, it was because I wanted to work with people I knew I could be successful around and that I could really contribute to. I don't think I ever pursued something where I didn't feel comfortable knowing that I could make an impact right away. And so I think I'm truly grateful that I was able to be part of the sports side where I could, and then translate that over to make sure that I'm also, you know, touching on the sports side, like as a way of my own job right now. So truly grateful. And I couldn't thank the people that, you know, gave me that first opportunity, the trust behind, you know, bringing me in, just behind the passion that I had. And I'm excited to see where that takes me in the future.
Have you ever gotten a job you've applied for?
I've got every job I've got is the ones that I've applied for. So, I mean,
yeah. How many of them are through the connections though? Like you had, it sounds like you had more of an inside track to pretty much every position that you've gotten.
Yeah.
And even whether it was officially posted or not, when it became officially posted, yeah, you applied, but I'm just, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think the main one that I would call out that I don't talk about a lot was my summer internship opportunity with the LA Clippers. This was right during the pandemic, so I didn't get the opportunity to actually go and work with them. But when I was trying to figure out, like in the middle of college, if I wanted to pursue a path in sports design, go actually be that GM that I wanted to be for an NBA team, I think that was my passion, or go work in tech. This was way before the tech side came together. I was like, okay, if I can get in with the LA Clippers, see what it's like to go work in business operations, that could potentially connect me to basketball operations. So that was through an application where I just, you know, I applied on LinkedIn, but the process of me even getting that internship was because I found out that one of their creative members also went to Syracuse. And so when I had my interview with them, I was sitting in a room and she knew exactly where I was sitting. And I was like, well, how do you know where I'm sitting? She's like, I went to Syracuse too. So just kind of goes to show like how powerful that connection at Syracuse was. But that was like one of the only times where I applied to something and it turned out in that direction. But I think that's what it goes to show you, how powerful social media is right now, and just networking, even if it's not intentional networking, it's just like being able to build a connection with someone else. I think that's what made me comfortable with knowing that I could talk to someone and get career advice, and that eventually land me a future job opportunity.
That was going to be my next question. You're doing all the leads here. When you share your content online, though, you do it from the position of wanting to help somebody else, not from a, hey, look at me kind of thing. And I
look
think
what I did.
Yeah. So I think that's awesome that you do that. And I guess I'm just wondering what your experience has been by doing it that way. obviously you've shared, you know, some of the job opportunities you've gotten, but the connection, other connections that you've gotten through that process.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we've all probably experienced in sports is that a lot of people early on, just because it was much harder to get into sports just due to the fact that there weren't as many positions available. So information also got gated. So like people wouldn't share out things, but now it's becoming more open as more opportunities are opening up, or the fact that these specific teams are understanding the value of creative and what it means to share these different stuff. So for me, I think the main thing was I don't want to gate any information from my past. I want to make sure that, you know, something that I probably learned over the last 4 years is probably valuable to someone else right now. So I tend to just share all my experiences just for the sake of knowing that it could help someone, you know, if they have a down day, like know that I also went through that. And this is how I navigated through it, or even through some of the demos and tutorials that I kind of show off quickly on Twitter and other pieces of social media. Like I intentionally go for under 1 minute on some of these videos because I want to show you that, you know, if I can do this under 1 minute, you can take your process that you probably spend 10, 20 minutes on and simplify it down. You know, in sports, we feel like, or I think sports kind of makes you feel like you have to work 100 hours a week just to get your job done. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't think about the fact that if you put time aside to see how you can simplify that, you can really get it to a point where it feels like 40 hours a 9-to-5. So that's kind of the mission that I go with when I share stuff on social media. It's like, how do I get the creative that's working 100 hours a week down to 40 hours? If I do that for you, just sharing something new, then I'm doing my job. And I think that's a gap that hasn't been filled. And so building that transparency and seeing how the community reacts to that so that they're sharing their own content. I think I just want to kind of be one of those forcing functions to making everyone feel like they can share stuff. I mean, Justin, for you too, even sharing the motion graphic stuff that you do, like it's a step in the direction that a lot of us should take where we feel like we're not giving industry secrets away. Like the tools are all available to us. Some people just can't find it. And even when we work from the Adobe side, it's like, well, we put so much time investing in building some of these tools and the people that should be using it don't see it right away all the time. I think that's what, you know, kind of inspires me to do that more so that I make sure that people aren't spending time at night on a computer screen doing their job when they could be with their families, with their friends. So building that healthy balance, I think, outside of just seeking the job stuff, like I wanted to make sure that people felt comfortable knowing that they can do that and have the ample amount of rest that they need after working a job.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month and AAPI Month. Kind of talk about you talked about your background a bit of your parents and growing up and them being educators and all that. What does it mean to you to be a part of the community that you come from?
It means everything. And I don't say that lightly by any means. I think the one thing that when we talked about building skepticism and hesitation for my family itself early on, it's because they didn't see people that look like me work in this industry. So how can they, you know, trust that their son is going to have a path that is kind of formed? And that's why a lot of immigrants kind of are forced into thinking that you have to go the safer path. And so for me, just, you know, hopefully trying to be a trailblazer so that others can have someone to look up to. I mean, obviously I had a lot of people I can look up to in the industry that come from Asian descent, but having more people, right? It's not just about me. It's about having multiple people that someone can just say, hey, go to their parents. If they're having a tough discussion that involves, you know, like this is the career path that I want to go down, being able to be a reference for these people to know that like, hey, this person went through that process. So like, I know that if I put in the work, I can get to that position as well. And just knowing that the families can also trust the process in that manner. I grew up with family members that would come and tell me that like, you need to have enough connections and you need to know people if you want to work in sports. And for me, it was just derailing all the time when I was like, well, why can't I have it? And it would always come down to some type of oh, well, you don't know the right people because, you know, they're not in the same communities as you. And so I always thought that like people were trying to make that out as a disadvantage. And even through a lot of the job opportunities that I've had, a lot of people would, you know, there were one of these many opportunities. I was once told that I only got the opportunity because my manager that hired me was of the same descent as myself. And at first it kind of rubbed me the wrong way where I was like, well, I feel like I actually earned this opportunity based on the work I already did. But I think now that I've grown up, I'm truly, even if that was the intention, I'm truly grateful that that person was thinking about it in that manner, that like it makes sense to bring more people of this descent into this community, so that, or into the sports community working in sports, so that it can have this chain reaction to other people that want to pursue it. So it becomes part of the norm. And so I think when I was younger, I was kind of, I wasn't as happy when I heard those comments from people in the creative space, but to see how important it is right now in regards to what it means to really be diverse and having diverse thoughts as part of these sports teams, I think it's extremely important. So I just, that the reason that I talk about sports still is because I want to make sure that even though I don't work in it right now, that people still know that that's an avenue that you can pursue if you're really interested in it.
As someone who comes from an Asian descent, how do you as a person of color and a person of your descent kind of break that stereotype moving forward? Like, kind of what's the advice to the younger generation or people who may be the same age as you who are applying for this to make themselves more, not more marketable, but open the eyes of the people who are hiring? And how much does it motivate you to just keep wanting to break down barriers, knowing that some of this stuff is still happening, you know, even in 2023?
I think the big thing I'll touch on, which is interesting because we talk about diversity and inclusion and all that kind of stuff all the time, and I'm glad that that's part of conversations and it's more prominent now. I think the harder barrier that we have to cross as Asian Americans, like that are going through the process of being immigrants and really making our place here, is not really the hiring process with different companies, but it's our families, right? Like being able to really tell them that this is something I'm passionate about, that I can pursue and be successful in. I think that's the conversation that a lot of people struggle with. And so that's why for me, when I said like this means everything for me, I truly mean it, because if I'm a face, like my intention on social media is not to be the biggest followed creative or individual. It's just to have a face out there so that if anyone's scrolling through their timeline, they can see someone that looks like me and know that they can pursue the same thing. And so I think the conversation with your families and stuff like that is much more difficult, and just having a face out there through that process. But the hiring thing is also one of those things where if you have the opportunity to influence another person's position at a certain company, like I always advocate, like if I know people of Asian descent that, and I know people that are hiring, I'm always connecting them, just because regardless if it's for that specific position, at least it's a connection that could potentially lead to a job elsewhere. And so just being an advocate around that, I think those are the main two things, which is breaking down that stereotype of what it means to work around families that don't get it right away. And it's also, you know, being an advocate for those people that don't think about you right away when you're applying for jobs or you're in the middle of that interview process.
What are some of the things that you talked with your own family about, like for those conversations? Because I feel like in some ways, you know, it's like you got to prove to your people around you at times, like, oh no, I'm doing this and this is the path that I'm on. Like, did you have specific conversations with your parents or your siblings or the people around you, or did you just kind of ignore the noise and say, use it almost as like a motivating factor of like, I'll let the work kind of speak for itself? Or did you have like any like hard conversations like that with your family?
Totally. And I think you just touched on it. I think the type of person I am is like, I lead by example. I let the work kind of speak for itself, but that doesn't mean that you avoid the conversations that are necessary in order to make the people around you comfortable. I mean, I'll touch on this again. Like, I am truly grateful that I have parents that are super supportive, and not that we always agreed on what that future looked like, but they trusted when I said, I know that taking steps ABC is going to lead me to XYZ. Mm. And a lot of parents aren't like that all the time. I'm grateful that I had those type of parents, and you might have family yeah. members that might not agree necessarily, but if you take them through that process and communicate with them, I think that's the bigger part, not hiding it. Like, you let yeah. the work speak for itself, but you also communicate every time something happens. I would share like the smallest things, like, hey, I got this freelance project, and you know, my happiness made my parents happy. And so as it became more consistent, it was one of those things where they started to understand what this could mean as a side gig, if that has to be what it is, or, you know, pursuing this full time. And so the transparency is super important. And I think bringing your parents or your family into the process gives them that level of comfort in you going through it.
How do you deal with mental health in your day to day? What are some things that you do as hobbies or as kind of relievers to help you kind of keep a level head and lower stress?
I'm really glad we're talking about this, and the fact that like it's all correlating with, you know, what's happening right now. I think a lot of when we talk about sports design or sports creative specifically, everyone wants to hustle and really get themselves out there and do whatever it takes. Or it's one of those things where some of these teams are smaller, so it's all on one person to deliver. So they'll work, they'll pull all-nighters just to get their work done. And I used to be one of those people, to be very honest with you. Like, I did not care about mental health, anything like that when I was younger. And it was something that, you know, the more I think about now, I wish a lot of the content I put out right now is because of that. Like, I don't want people to feel like or think that that's the only way to succeed. Like, there are different avenues, building a healthy separation. The one thing that the job at Adobe has allowed me to do is build those guardrails in regards to when I spend time working and when I spend time doing other stuff. And so, like I mentioned before, when we were chatting, 4 o'clock every day for me is when I stop working and I dedicate myself for 1 or 2 hours in the gym. Luckily, we have a gym at the office. And sure, we work in sports, so like there's always weight rooms and stuff, but I never did that when I was working in sports. I feel like I dedicated myself more to it after, and like just seeing progress in myself, as well as knowing that I can dedicate 1 to 2 hours of my day to listen to different podcasts, reflect on my day. And then maybe, you know, right before dinner, I check my emails or whatever I'm getting for an hour. I can balance that time. So I'm using the healthy parts of my brain to really focus on when my work needs to be done. I think I've built that balance for the last year and a half, and it's helped me tremendously. And it's something that I didn't do when I was working in sports as often. And so finding barriers of like when and setting time aside for certain things, we don't, or at least I didn't do a good job of it when I was working at sports, but I'd advise anyone just like take the time and really block off certain parts of your day to doing different activities, whether that's going on a walk or going to the gym. Like, I'm super passionate about going to the gym now just because of that, because it's my 1 hour to multitask while learning from a podcast or just spending time improving myself and my goals from an exercise standpoint. So I think that's what's helped me. And it's one of those things when you're navigating what it feels like to not have to go to school anymore and just working full time. I think that was one of the most difficult transitions I had to go through. And so finding the right activities to help you in that so you don't break down or burn out as quickly is super important.
So true. And I feel like I feel like creatives are a large group of masochists that like to torture themselves in a lot of ways, because it's like we don't give ourselves breaks, but breaks are actually like beneficial to the brain. and like actually help the creative process. So I love that, you know, you were candid about, you know, what it was like before and after. I experienced the same thing where it was like, I would just power through and then it would be 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, why am I still on the same portion of this edit? Right. And it's because I've been working on it for 12 hours and haven't taken a step away except to use the bathroom or quickly eat something. How do you, on the days where your schedule is a little bit more jam-packed or times are a little bit stressful or you've got something like personal going on, how do you continue, you know, blocking out your day and giving yourself those breaks? Cause I feel like sometimes for me personally, it's hard to do that. Cause I feel like I have to constantly be productive. Like, I feel like right now we're in this in-between shift of like, we like the hustle culture, but we don't, but we want to give ourselves breaks, but we want to be productive. Like what's your take on all of that?
Yeah, I think it's the way you approach it. The one thing that, especially for the last few weeks for me, even when I go through the process of trying to make content for my own social channels, at first I thought of it as like, oh, I need to deliver for the people that need this. And so I was putting that own pressure on myself to record these different demos and tutorials. And over the last few weeks, I've gone through this process of just spending an hour or two at night just designing for the sake of designing for myself. I think you can think of it as a job, but it's the intention that you put towards what you're doing. For me, I don't design to get likes or anything like that. I've found out that the designs that I used to take, you know, 30 minutes, 1 hour just to get done for my day, the things that I'm spending 3-4 hours on across multiple nights, it feels more therapeutic for me. And so I found that as an avenue as for me to just really concentrate on the things that I like doing. But during those like jam-packed days, I think you have to continue advocating for yourself. I think you don't force it in, but like you want to make sure that you're making it very clear that like this is something you get happiness out of, like going to the gym or going on a run, like that makes you happy. And so being able to be consistent with that and reflecting on it, maybe writing in a journal, some of these stuff are just things that I've slowly tried to implement during my day to see if I can, you know, every day is going to be different, but if you can have something consistent in that manner, you're always going to feel like you have the energy to move forward.
I still don't believe you, by the way, about your cutout. When you talk about cutouts, enjoying doing those. We went back and forth on Twitter, and you asked the question, and I said,
"Wait, what?"
I said, "Nobody likes doing cutouts. Let's face it; like that's perfect for AI." And you were like, "I actually kind of do." I still don't believe you 100%. There's a reason.
I'm dying.
There's a reason the object tool was invented, right?
Totally. I listen, Justin, I believe you. And I think it's one of those things where it's fine. Like a lot of people don't like jersey swapping. Like I think that's another big thing. It's like, oh, that's tedious. I love just thinking about what a picture could look like if I put my own twist to it. And so I think it's finding the right things that help you in that path. But I always advocate, like, you know, we'll have this debate on Twitter, pen tool or object selection. If you're spending, there's a lot of people that will continue to tell me that using the pen tool is the best way to go about doing a cutout, or it's using one of these like quick self-starters like AI object selection that will get you through that process. But yeah, sometimes you just need to think about what's going to get you to that end result. And so, yeah, I think I'm a little crazy and nerdy about our tools when it comes down to it, where I'll debate all these small things like naming your layers or what type of tool you should use in order to get stuff done. So yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of the creative process, right? Like each totally. Of us has our own way. And that's why I love Adobe's tools. Like I feel like a lot of our products are very flexible. Like Premiere Pro, you can customize your layout. You can customize it however you want. But I also, what I love about this conversation, Justin, is, and you, you know, calling out Akshay in a sense, is that each of us has our own like preferences for doing things. And for some of us, right, like like clipping out, cutting out a player, pen tooling all the way around, like that might be relaxing for some people, right? Like some people like knitting, other people think that's like torture, right? And I think that's the beauty of the creative process. Also, I am not really a designer, but I feel like the times that I have done, like the rare times, I think it's been like 3 times that I've cut out a player, pen tool is the best. Like I love doing the little like tiny dots going around all the, you know, the player until I get to the hair. That's another part. I hate it when I get to the hair because I'm like, I don't know where should my pen tool go. But I just had to bring that up.
You grew up on the East Coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Northeast, cold weather, and now you've navigated yourself to a whole different part. Kind of talk about that migration to the West Coast and what you like, what differences don't you like?
This is a great question. I feel like Karina and I talk about this all the time.
We have. Yeah.
It was one of the most difficult transitions I've ever had to make. Like, I will never make it sound easy for people. Everyone loves the fact that they don't see snow. Like, that's the main thing that I hear from people, even from like the Boston area that moved to San Francisco. They're like, oh, you know what? I don't have to see snow. I'm like, well, I went to school and I saw snow all the time. Like, I enjoy seeing snow, but San Francisco over the last few months have been so rainy. And I'm like, I'd take snow over this weather. And it's like, you're not getting hot weather. So it's like in between. So I have to like ask coworkers like what to expect during certain times of the year. I don't like that unpredictability. Like I think I trust just knowing I'm going to get snow at some point. It's going to get cold. Like I got to go through that cycle process. So, I mean, it's been a weird transition. I think San Francisco is like not exactly what you expect. Like you would think, oh, like 80 degree, 90 degree weather. It's like, it's between 40. It's like really cold at night and like slightly warm during the day. So like, it's not, you're not really getting what you expect when you come out to California. So that's my hot take there about the north side, Northern Cali. But yeah, I think it's not what you expect, but it is a slow learning process.
For people that don't really understand what a product manager does, like explain it to us like we're in kindergarten, number one. And number two, like what similarities have you found between being a product manager, because in a way you're leading a team, and working in sports?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure out the process of like how I describe it myself. It's one of those unique careers where you're very focused on the like short-term and long-term roadmap of a product and like its development process, as well as finding the balance of like taking in user and customer feedback and bringing it to the perspective of how you're going to approach the decision making. So I think the easiest way I would describe my day to day is more so figuring out how we can align ourselves and the new types of features or ideas that help us stabilize this product and move it forward. And I think the parallels I see is for me, like the segments of how you go about developing a product, it involves the product team, of course, which is kind of overseeing the efforts by the engineering teams and the design teams. So I get to like go in the morning and see different designs from our design team and like see where they want to position different parts of our UI, UX. And then our engineering team really goes through the process of building the small iterative parts. I think there's a lot of things that even going through this process as a product manager that I wish I knew as a creative, like a project you can say like, I want to put together this whole docuseries on one of the teams that I work for in athletics, but you don't really dissect it down to the small details. And this job is all about the details. Like if someone clicks a button, like how long should that button be clicked on before it changes to something else? Like really thinking down to the weeds of how it all comes together. I think people originally confuse us as like a project manager, which is not necessarily right. The role all the time. It's just being able to work with the business side, with the engineering side, with design, to come together to develop, to deliver an experience for users. And so from the product side, we're kind of defining what that means for a user to go through an experience and make sure that they're getting the output that we're trying to deliver on.
It's awesome. I mean, I know the playoffs, the NBA playoffs are going on. So I'm just thinking about all of the things that a regular team would go through, right? Like your practices, you have all of these iterations of a play, and it's, you know, there's a lot of alignment. So I love your career journey is so unique. And I appreciate you sharing your journey with us and sharing some insights and sharing your awesome parents. I haven't met them. Hopefully I get to meet them one day. But I feel like, you know, you have such a great insight to the sports creative industry, and we're grateful that you're a part of it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.